He's come on, here. Fire.
Hey, Roger. Keep shoot. Keep shoot.
Bushmaster 2-6. We need to move time now.
All right, we just engaged all 8 individuals.
Yeah, we got 2 birds. We're still firing.
Roger.
Got him.
2-6 is 2-6. We'll move, but we got 30
seconds. Oh, fuck, sorry. Well, I was going to
bypass.
God damn it, Kyle.
Sorry. I hit my head.
Welcome to the Whistleblower Newsroom. What you just heard was a video given to WikiLeaks by Bradley, now Chelsea Manning, called Collateral Murder, showing 2 American Apache helicopters firing on civilians below, seriously wounding 2 children and killing a dozen people, including 2 Reuters journalists named Saeed Jamagh and Namir Nu-el-Din. After Reuters demanded an investigation, the U.S. military concluded that its soldiers and pilots had acted in accordance with the law of armed conflict and their rules of engagement. Military spokesman Lieutenant Scott Blakewell claimed that the victims died in a battle between U.S. forces and insurgents, and that there was no question coalition forces were clearly engaged in combat operations against a hostile force. This is definitely not clear at all in the video. This video and other materials Manning leaked to WikiLeaks is why Julian Assange was dragged out of the Ecuadorian embassy this morning by British law enforcement on behalf of the American government. The American government unsealed its indictment against Assange today, charging him with conspiring with Manning to crack a password on a classified government computer to disclose classified information that could be used to injure the United States. I'm Christina Borgeson, and Celia Farber is here today with us, my co-host. And Celia, you there?
I'm here.
And you want to take it from...
Am I coming through okay?
Yeah, you're coming through. Take it away. Celia has her piece on this.
Well, I've, like everybody, been, not shocked, but feeling really deeply disturbed and queasy all day over these events and that harrowing image of Assange hunched over and looking much older.
With
than
a beard,
his age.
White beard, yeah.
And somebody said on Twitter that this is going to be one of the most iconic images of this era and of this war we've been in for so long now, between essentially the free word, the free press, and the totalitarian, well, both the deep state and the totalitarian tech state, which Julian Assange has given his life to answering and offering a way for people to still see the truth through the whole machine of lies. So my thoughts about it all, I've been thinking for some time, been thinking about Julian Assange for many years, and I think he's a fascinating person and very multidimensional. And there's an interview with him, that he did, that is my favorite interview with Julian Assange. It was with the now late and outstanding journalist Michael Hastings in Rolling Stone. I want to say of all places. But in this interview, something that jumped out at me is where Julian Assange, toward the end of the interview, lays out very clearly how clear he is about what he's doing, what his work is, what the work of WikiLeaks is, how serious it is, and what the potential cost is. So I want to read this exchange. Michael Hastings says, "What has the low point been for you in all this? Were there mornings you woke up saying, 'What have I got myself into?'" And Assange replies, "I understood that the significance of what we were doing was greater than WikiLeaks as an institution and greater than our personal lives. In November, I told our people, perhaps to their surprise, that what we were doing was more significant than the life of any one of us. To that degree, the battles that we've had, the severity of the battles that we've had, is not something I have found to be difficult to deal with. Their severity is a reflection of the quality and importance of our work.
Indeed.
So this was in 2012.
Gary Webb said the same thing about his work, that, you know, he didn't get into trouble until he covered something that was really important to cover. That's Gary Webb said the same thing. So
yeah, and there is this paradox at the heart of all truly important journalism, which is that as soon as it gets really accurate, the person reporting or revealing or publishing gets essentially, in one of many ways, neutralized and discredited. So the more accurate, the more the discrediting machine kicks in.
Well, it's also anyway, the more critical the issue, you know, in terms of if you're covering the powerful, that's when your accurate reporting gets you in trouble. Powerful institutions,
exactly.
Either private or government.
But there's so much to talk about with what happened today, what's been happening. WikiLeaks and Assange, it's Grand Central Station, where everything comes together. I don't understand why this administration did this at this time. I don't personally understand it. It does not make sense to me, and I think it's a terrible blight on the U.S.,
well,
internationally, not that we have a great reputation as it is.
This could unfold in several ways, and when our guest Ray McGovern comes on, maybe we can discuss that. I think it would be great, though, if we could just hear Julian's voice for a minute. And I think that you picked out a couple clips that I think were really great. So you want to talk about the first one that you picked out?
Yeah, I do. First, I just want to say, you know, we're all very upset and traumatized and worried for Julian. I just want to stress that I was thinking, what can we do? What can we do? What we can do is remember how much he said to us when he still had his voice.
Right.
And go back and listen to what he said, because he said it all.
Right.
So I was reviewing some clips today. And I happened upon one I had listened to before. John Pilger, the Australian historian, documentarian, and author, is, of course, a great friend of Assange and has done many great interviews with him. And in one of them, Julian Assange spells out which of everything he's published, which email he finds to be the most damning and explosive. So let's listen to the exchange between Pilger and Assange.
There's a early 2014 email from Hillary Clinton, so not so long after she left Secretary of State, to her campaign manager, John Podesta. That email, it states that ISIS, is funded by Saudi Arabia and Qatar. The governments of Saudi Arabia and Qatar. Now, I think this is the most significant email in the whole collection. And perhaps because Saudi and Qatari money is spread all over the place, including into many media institutions. All serious analysts know, even the US government has mentioned or agreed with that some Saudi figures have been supporting ISIS, funding ISIS. But the dodge has always been it's just some rogue princes using their cut of the oil money to do whatever they like, but actually the government disapproves. But that email says that no, it is the governments of Saudi and the government and Qatar that have been funding ISIS?
The Saudis, the Qataris, the Moroccans, the Bahrainis, particularly the Saudis and the Qataris, are giving all this money to the Clinton Foundation, while Hillary Clinton is Secretary of State and the State Department is approving massive arms sales, particularly to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. Under Hillary Clinton, and our Clinton emails reveal significant discussion about it, the largest ever arms deal in the world was made with Saudi Arabia, more than $80 billion. In fact, during her tenure as Secretary of State, total arms exports from the United States in terms of the dollar value doubled.
Doubled. And of course, the consequence of that is that this notorious terrorist jihadist group called ISIL or ISIS is created largely with money from the very people who are giving money to the Clinton Foundation.
Yes.
Boom, drop the mic. I mean, okay.
Yeah.
So, Celia, you want to... Go ahead.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, that one...
But then the DNC, they call it a hack, we call it a download occurs, and next thing you know, Assange is a front and center talking about Seth Rich, right?
The Seth Rich matter. Has the, it's radioactive, it's very taboo, utterly taboo in American media.
Yeah, so and now we have to remind our listeners who Seth Rich was.
So Seth Rich worked at the DNC and he was,
He was a data analyst. Yeah. He was a data analyst
He was a Bernie Sanders supporter, apparently.
Yes, he was. He was an ardent Bernie Sanders reporter, and he was at 4:20 a.m. in the morning on July 10th, 2016, shot in the back of the head, two gunshot wounds. Basically, executed. Okay. So, Julian stepped forward.
Kinds of strange things happened. Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead, Christina.
Yeah, and then Julian stepped forward and spoke about Seth Rich's death. So, should we listen to that clip?
Julian Assange has been, he's extremely precise and careful in everything that he says. Our present, the moment that we're in the United States after the Mueller report and with this enormous, Russiagate hysteria, at the center of that, it was like sort of the linchpin of all that is, did the Russians hack the DNC emails? And did Donald Trump collude with the Russians? We now have the answers to that, which many people have been clear about for a long time, but none of the highest paid media commentators included. We hope Ray McGovern is going to come on shortly.
Yes, he is coming on. He had a little minor emergency, but it's over. He'll be coming on. But let's listen to what.
Right. So I just want to say this: when Julian Assange, he hardly ever went near it, but this is one rare clip where he goes right up to it, and maybe later we can discuss what we think he's actually saying in this clip. It's a very interesting clip, so let's listen.
Donald Trump has had a disastrous few weeks. If you look at the polls, he needs a miracle. In the American political lexicon, there's such a thing as the October surprise. the stuff that you're sitting on, is an October surprise in there?
We
do you even know
material.
What you're sitting on?
WikiLeaks never sits on material. Our whistleblowers go to significant efforts to get us material and often very significant risks. As a 27-year-old who works for the DNC, who was shot in the back, murdered just 2 weeks ago for unknown reasons as he was walking down the street in Washington. So
that was just a robbery, I believe, wasn't it?
No, there's no finding. So
What are you suggesting?
I'm suggesting that our sources take risks and they become concerned to see things occurring like that.
But was he one of your sources then? I mean,
we don't comment on who our sources are.
But why make the suggestion about a young guy being shot in the streets of Washington?
Because we have to understand how high the stakes are in the United States, and that our sources are, you know, our sources face serious risks. That's why they come to us, so we can protect their anonymity.
But it's quite something to suggest a murder. So, that's basically what you're doing.
Well, that others have suggested that. We are investigating to understand what happened in that situation with Seth Rich. I think it is a concerning situation. There's not a conclusion yet. We wouldn't be willing to state a conclusion, but we are concerned about it. And more importantly, a variety of WikiLeaks sources are concerned when that kind of thing happens.
There you go. And didn't WikiLeaks put up a $25,000 bounty for anybody who could come forward with information about who killed Seth Rich?
Yeah. I mean, listening to it again, I find that it's he does say our sources face significant danger. Right after saying there was this DNC for 27 years old who was shot, the interviewer then gets very hostile. I mean, it's really an interesting clip. What do you think, Christina?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the fact that he's mentioning Seth and he's talking about him this way within the same context as sources, you know, raises eyebrows and you know, makes you think that he's, well, I mean, he's obviously connecting murder with the dangers that WikiLeaks sources face. So, you know, it's
hard to imagine that there's any other because he brings it up. It's not brought up. He brings it up.
Right.
He brings up Seth Rich.
Right. And
but there is no discussion of Seth Rich permitted anywhere in U.S. media.
Oh, yeah. Except to say, it was a robbery gone bad or it was this or whatever the story du jour is with exactly nothing to back it up, you know.
But we have to also come back to all this stuff. How did they get the emails? How did WikiLeaks get the emails? We don't talk about what was in those emails.
We don't take
any action against the criminal activity described in those emails.
Exactly.
It's all about
Sarah
Julian Assange and who gave him the, you know, and that's, it's like we live in an upside down world. So what do you do about that?
Well, the problem is the corruption. The corruption in the mainstream is so complete now, and certainly this Russiagate thing has demonstrated that it's so complete that, and this is the game that's played with stories like the Seth Rich story. You know, there's a narrative that has to be put out. It's a false narrative. It's backed up by nothing, and you just keep putting it out until, you know, if it's proven otherwise for some reason, then you move the target over here and you come up with a new narrative to cover what you want to cover, you know, to cover the distasteful or dangerous or deadly truth that you want to uncover, and you just keep going like that. I mean, I've been experiencing that with the TWA. I'm experiencing it to this day with the TWA 800 story. Smithsonian, okay, the curators of the nation's history, you know, recently put out a documentary refreshing the cover-up, you know. So they even do it, yeah. They even go back and refresh cover-ups, you know, on stories, historical stories. So,
sure.
But Seth, yeah. Set the really, really dangerous stories, you know, they sort of disappear into this black hole of silence, you know? So
yeah,
listen.
They let everybody know that just don't touch this, and everybody
yeah.
gets it.
I don't want to go too much further without bringing on our next guest, but before we bring him on, we actually want to play a clip of him talking about the contents. As you were saying, nobody talks about the contents, which is one of the reasons why.
Right. Vault 7.
Yes. Talk about Vault 7 and this clip that we're going to hear.
Vault 7 and Ray McGovern's take on what was in Vault 7 and why it matters and what. And this is the thing I have found again and again. And I'm guilty of this, too. Julian Assange sacrifices his life for these drops, right? These unbelievable, like, info atomic bombs. And we just talk about Julian Assange, not what was in the drop.
Right.
So let's hear Ray McGovern talk about what was the significance of that big drop that almost didn't get discussed or analyzed, which was Vault 7.
2017, Julian Assange announced that he had this array of cyber tools that in volume, they rivaled, if not exceeded, all the information that Ed Snowden took out into Hong Kong. And then he was going to publish them bit by bit. Wow. Now, the first two were really interesting. A cyber tool that allowed you to take control of a car and make it go 120 miles an hour. You could kill somebody that way. And we think that's happened. So that made the New York Times on the 7th of March, 2017. And another tool. This one allows you to listen to conversations anywhere near a television that appears to be off, but is really recording and sending everything you say. That was sexy enough. But on the 31st of March, and this is really interesting, so tune in now. On the 31st of March, there was a tool called Marble Framework, okay? Now what did that tool allow people to do? Well, it allowed them to hack into other servers or computers, disguise who it was that was hacking in, and leave little breadcrumbs, the little telltale signs about who may have hacked in. Now, the CIA worked in five languages, Korean, Persian, Arabic, Chinese, and Russian. We also knew from these authentic WikiLeaks documents or Vault 7 documents published by WikiLeaks that this tool was used in 2016. That's interesting. Now.
So that's Ray McGovern, and I just want to remind our listeners who Ray McGovern is. He was a CIA analyst for 27 years from the administrations of John Kennedy to that of George H.W. Bush. And his duties included chairing national intelligence estimates and preparing the president's daily brief. He's also a Russian specialist. And in January 2003, Ray co-created Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity to expose how intelligence was being falsified to justify the war in Iraq. He's been blowing the whistle on the intelligence community ever since. And he's also turned into a journalist, a great one at that. Welcome, Ray. Are you there? Hello. I don't think he's on. I don't know what happened. Well, we don't have Ray for the moment. But Ray,
okay.
are we having audio difficulties?
Can you hear me?
Oh, there you go. We just, you know, we're just singing your praises, and then you weren't there. So welcome.
Well, I didn't recognize myself.
So Ray, talk to us about what you're seeing, what happened today, and what you're seeing.
What was your first thought when you heard the news today about Julian Assange, or your first feeling?
Well, it's a very sad day, of course, for freedom. My first thought, of course, was, my goodness, here's the country, the UK, formerly England. You know, in 1215, the nobles wrested power from the king and created something called the Magna Carta, which guaranteed all kinds of freedoms to English people. Later, sort of patterned on that, our forefathers in America created the Bill of Rights, where freedom of the press was guaranteed. And here, this charade of shipping Julian out after manhandling him and carrying him out. I know how that feels. These are thugs. These aren't security services officers. They're thugs. And the ostensible, well, the clear reason was to make an example of Julian. Look, Julian, this is what happens if you tell the truth that the establishment finds embarrassing. Now, maybe it's good to return to the collateral murder tape. You heard part of it. You probably recognize the American soldiers taking Lee and shooting up people, including two Reuters correspondents. They didn't know probably they were correspondents, but these were innocent people, 12 of them got killed. And then they shot up a van with two small children on it, killed the children's father. I mean, the bloodthirsty language they use, you know, show that not only were the Iraqi people brutalized, especially during the celebrated surge. This all happened during the surge, okay? But so were the U.S. soldiers. And Bradley Whitty saw that. And now, of course, he's Chelsea Manning. And, you know, as any human being would do, he said, you know, this is beyond the pale. If we don't get this out to the American people, people can't make a judgment about these things. And so he decided to give it to Julian Assange. And he got it to him securely through a leak, through a download from Lady Gaga, from a CD that had Lady Gaga on it. You know, the whole story is really bizarre, but that's what he did. Now, the point I would make is this. As horrible as that was, that scene there outside Baghdad in during the surge, there was a Washington Post journalist posted with that unit. He was in the area. He saw the video. We know that. And he said nothing. He said nothing at all. He knew that the two Reuters correspondents were killed. He didn't tell Reuters. He didn't say anything. And his name was David Finkel. He's a big wig now. He's a big wig in the Washington Post. And not only that, but he wrote a book about the good soldiers, the soldiers in this particular unit that had been so brutalized and so corrupted that they went ahead and brutalized other people. So here's a sort of a vignette that shows what the established media in the person now of David Finkel didn't do for obvious reasons. You know, this was against the narrative. And what Bradley, Chelsea Manning, and Assange did do. So that's really important because what we have now, and I'll just finish with this, is, you know, we used to call what we have at the military-industrial complex. Well, you know, it's much more than that. It's the military-industrial, congressional, intelligence, media, academia, think tank complex. It translates in an acronym to Mickey Matt, okay? A I'll do it again. Military, industrial, congressional, intelligence, media, academia, think tank complex. Now, why do I say media? Well, the whole thing would fall apart if they didn't have full cooperation of the media. That's what they have. And what it is incumbent upon us to do is to realize the fourth estate is dead. We have a fifth estate, but we haven't been clever enough to use it in ways that most Americans and most other people can really get the truth. The truth is out there. We know it. We've said it. But it doesn't get to American ears or eyes.
Well, I mean, here's the question, though. Even if it does get to American ears and eyes, if the state is using its military might, its law enforcement agencies, its, you know, civilian law enforcement agencies and so on to attack people if they say things that they don't want them to say, or do things that are, you know, on the face of it, legal, but uncomfortable for the state to have people, you know, see, then what do you do? What do you do, well, Ray?
I'll tell you what you do. You go into this operation with your eyes wide open, okay? Somebody's got to expose all this. Nobody else is going to do it. And that's why we're invited, we're elected. Now, what do I mean by eyes wide open? Well, I.F. Stone put it this way. He said, you have to realize that going into this kind of fray against this formidable adversaries, you're going to lose. And then you're going to lose. And then you're going to lose again. But then one fine day, the people who think the way you do and feel really passionate about the truth, I'm going to win, okay? And what does that mean? That means to me that I might not live long enough to see the truth come out on these things. But that doesn't matter. I have to pursue this knowing that initially we're going to lose and have a kind of a relaxed sense of almost humor saying, look, Dan Berrigan is right when he says the good is worth doing because it's good.
That's right. No, I agree with that. But now let's talk about Julian. What's going to happen to him right now? I mean, is he in a jail somewhere right now? What are they going to do? What do you think is going to be the denouement of, you know, what's going to come next for him? And what's going to happen when he gets here?
Well, the British are, of course, vassal states to us, and they'll just do what Washington says. Sort of a little aside here, the people in the rest of Europe are a little ticked off of the British for the Brexit frivolities. Now they know how the British look at human rights. They know that the British are in direct violation of two UN judgments saying that Julian Assange has been illegally detained. And so, you know, maybe there are enough people in Western Europe who say, well, you know, do we want the Brits? You know, let them detach and drift off to the westward in the Atlantic and let them attach themselves to the United States. They're already pretty much attached at the hip. You know, there's no procedure here that would guarantee Julian any sort of proper redress. The courts in London have already shown, the Supreme Court has shown bias against Assange, and you know, when push comes to shove, just as the Attorney General before Iraq, the Lord Goldsmith, changed his mind about whether Iraq was legal or not, the war on Iraq, the Supreme Court person or the equivalent in London will do the same. So what will happen? Well, he'll be extradited. We know that there's a charge, an indictment against him. We knew that for years.
But is he going to go before a military court or a civil court?
Well, I would imagine a civil court, but, you know, you're out of my field now. I'm not a lawyer and don't pretend to be.
Right.
But the idea is that they will try to get him not for publishing. I mean, my God, that's so flagrant a violation of the First Amendment. So they're not going to get him because he published sensitive materials. They're going to try to prove that he directly solicited, that he suborned Chelsea Manning into giving him those emails and those materials.
Yeah, and you know,
revealing things.
But the fine line there is, wait, hold up. The fine line here is the OPSEC situation, right? I mean, basically, if because they're saying he helped him crack a password and disclose classified information, but that also he hid his identity and stuff. And indeed, there are security operations that people that WikiLeaks helps if somebody is leaking, is whistleblowing to them. They help them to maintain their anonymity, and they help them to sort of cover their tracks or whatever. And that's not the same as soliciting the information. And this reporter, I forget her name now, but she was saying that that's the hair that they're going to try and split.
Well, Laura Poitras and Ed Snowden himself were very active in doing this kind of thing. It's, you know, we have to go back to basics here. When Chelsea Manning decided to publish these horrendous things, and in the stated hope that the American people needed to know this and needed to decide whether that's what we are as Americans.
Right.
When she did this, okay, the expectation was that there would be a salutary development, that the truth shall set us free.
Well, now, and that criminal charges would come out of it, you know?
What did Bradley Manning at the time expect? Well, he went to the, you know, hang on, because nobody knows this. He went first to the New York Times, and then he went to the Washington Post. Now, what does that say? That says that he was rejected by both. They weren't interested, and that's a matter of public record. Nobody knows that, but that's what he did, okay? Then he found out, well, you know, if I'm going to get this stuff out and I have to get it securely out, well, I'll put in a Lady Gaga CD there and download all this stuff, and I'll somehow get it to somebody who I know does not adulterate the stuff he puts out, that does not fix it or mold it in any way. And that happens to be the head of WikiLeaks, Julian. So I'll figure out a way to do that. Now, that's all a far cry from charging Julian Assange with soliciting or to enabling or tricking Manning into giving this information. He wanted to produce it. He thought he could do it securely. And if he hadn't been revealed by that email follower that he had, or the fellow he was in contact with in California, then he might still be, the story might be different, but he was betrayed. Julian and Manning both said, you know, we did the right thing. And Julian, I'm sure, will hope that the rest of us will wake up now. You know, they came first to Julian, okay? Now, who are they going to hunt for next? Julian was well within his rights. He's a publisher of information. This business about using the Espionage Act is so transparent that maybe there are still some honest enough judges in the United States that will throw that right out of court because it doesn't obtain these circumstances. The First Amendment is sacred. The Bill of Rights is sacred. It used to be that the Magna Carta was sacred. All that stuff has been deemed, well, quaint and obsolete by the powers that be.
So, Celia, you were going to say something before.
I think I was just going to say, make that point that Bradley Manning brought the material to what Ray said about the New York Times and the Washington Post. There are just so many media scandals. It's like Ray Bradbury's book, what's it called? Help me out. Where the firemen start the fires, and we have a media that pushes away with real aggression and contempt the biggest stories of our time. They hate truth. They hate stories. They hate reportage. They hate investigative journalism. And I feel this is the big cancerous problem of our time. We don't have a press. Never mind free press or First Amendment. We're all fighting for something, but we don't have the press itself doesn't want to be free.
So, well, I mean, the press is a paid propaganda arm to the Mickey Mat, right? It's part of the Mickey Mat. So, Ray, talk about doesn't Mueller have an indictment for Assange as well?
Mueller?
Yeah.
Well,
isn't there?
He's have been charging Russians right and left on
yes.
spurious evidence. I haven't seen anything that indicates he's pursuing Assange. Of course, he's finished his work now. Now, you know, people need to sort of segregate out what Mueller has decided and what still needs to happen. Now, this hoax where for 2.5 years now, the Democrats and the press, it's sort of like a convenient alliance now. We're trying to prove that Trump colluded with Russia and that he owes his victory to Vladimir Putin. Now, that was what Brits call rubbish from the beginning. And finally, St. Robert Mueller, whom everybody was lighting candles to prove this, finally said, well, I can't fix information like we did for weapons of mass destruction. I'm going to have to tell the truth. There was no such collusion. Okay, that's number one. That should be settled law, as we used to say. Okay, what's number two? The myth still that the Russians hacked into the DNC and gave those emails to WikiLeaks. Now, I forget whether I said this before, but Obama himself sort of reeled out on that 2 days before he left town when he said, the conclusions of the intelligence community with respect to how the Russian, quote, hacking, end quote, got to WikiLeaks are inconclusive. Got it? Inconclusive
right.
conclusions.
Right.
That's right after he had been briefed up and down by the head intelligence people. So he was trying to protect himself. There is no evidence of such a connection. So what we're left with here is the widespread belief, believed by most Americans and sort of educated by the likes of Maddow, that the Russians did hack and they did swing the election to Trump. And so he is, in a sense, an illegitimate president. There's no evidence of that at all. And what evidence there was in the beginning, that is, what they cited, was Russian hacking of the DNC. Now, in a word, we can prove that the Russians did not hack into the DNC, and we can prove that based on forensics, based on principles of physics, like fluid dynamics. These principles don't change, okay? We have looked at the metadata. We have looked at the forensics, which, for some reason, James Comey, the head of the FBI, said, well, I don't want to do that. No, we'll let Hillary's cyber outfit, CrowdStrike, do that. Well, that's misfeasance. That's malfeasance. You know, the head of the FBI should have seized those computers, and why he didn't, well, I think why he didn't, and stay with me now, because this is a little bit complicated. If Comey, after the DNC said, we've been hacked, and then CrowdStrike said, yeah, and we have Russian telltale signs there, and then this Lucifer 2 says, They're both right. The DNC and CrowdStrike, and we did it. We Guccifer 2.0. My God. Now, that all happened within 3 days, right? Now, if you were the FBI director, come on. It's a no-brainer. What would you have done? You would have seized those computers.
Right.
You have gotten physical. Now, he didn't do that. And so when he had to explain why he didn't do that to the head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, he said, well, I can see that would be, that's why we recognize as best practice to have physical access to. But we relied on a crackerjack, state-of-the-art, high-class, high-class cyber outfit called CrowdStrike. It is anything but that, and it was worked for and paid by the DNC. Okay, so why didn't he go in there? Well, this is not physics or forensics, but Bill, Benny, and I, me from my all source kind of connecting dots investigation background, and he from his technical background, we both opine, okay, this is not a big conclusion, we think it's at least as likely that John Brennan and the CIA and his new Directorate for Cyber Innovation were responsible for the telltale signs and the indictment, so to speak, of Russia for hacking into the DNC. They had the capability, they had the motive, they had the chance to do that, and the metadata that we've seen and examined, and not only two former technical directors of the NSA who are part of our veteran intelligence professionals facility, but a whole bunch of independent forensics people who have no access to grind, but like to really do the technical stuff and find out what really happened. So, bottom line here, the second myth persists. And as long as Muyam Barr repeats or regurgitates what Mueller says, and of course he has to, because Mueller has indicted Russians for this. I mean, you know, he's indicted Russians on the basis of information from Guccifer 2.0, whom Bill Binney and others in our group can prove by forensics is an out-and-out fraud, okay? We can.
What do you mean he's a Guccifer is an out-and-out fraud? What does that mean exactly?
Well, I have to tell you that, well, I have to, Bill and Bill Binney and Ed Loomis and others have done, looked at the metadata associated with the leaks or with the intrusions cited by Guccifer 2.0. They are falsified in separating out one big event into two, and then there are other signs that this stuff was copied onto a thumb drive, not hacked. And those signs have to do with a special format called FAT, F-A-T, okay? And the FAT is what you use to store things. It has no function with respect to the Internet or hacking. It's what you do when you store things.
So Guccifer is just a made-up thing? I mean, I don't get it. Guccifer,
yeah.
There's no person behind Guccifer. Guccifer is just somebody.
That's right. Yeah.
Somebody created Guccifer. Who was the first person to mention Guccifer then?
Well, he arose 3 days after Julian Assange announced, I have emails relating to Hillary Clinton, and we're about to, well, he said, pending publication, okay? So Guccifer, an unknown construct, all of a sudden arises out of nowhere. Now, we have to be careful. We use non-sexist language referring to Guccifer, because we don't know if it's a he or she or an it.
Okay.
But Bill and I both think that it was a creation of this cyber warfare tools that John Brennan had been working on with the help of NSA for 15 years.
So you now, think Guccifer is a John Brennan creature?
Yeah, that's what I think. Now,
wow.
I can't prove that.
Right.
I can't prove that, but, you know, look at Vault 7. It was mentioned before. Look at Marble Framework,
yep.
Which know, and which has the capability to intrude and to disguise who intrude and to blame it on somebody else. The CIA sometimes have big words, right? Obfuscate. That's the word they use in the text explaining this tool. They say it's the ability to hack in and obfuscate who hacked in, and leave telltale signs blaming on somebody else. So it's pretty clear that there was motive, there was opportunity, and why is it? Why is it that Comey to this day has not looked at those computers? Why is it that the whole press has avoided this whole thing? It's pretty, it's shameful, but it's the state of the art here. And when we can prove this, and the only air or print we can get are sites that nobody looks at or nobody reads, we are even kept out of the alternative media. And I would cite places like Counterpunch.
What?
Like reader supported news.
Why?
Like Can I just Truth jump in? Out, it, like Amy Goodman.
Truth Out, Amy Goodman? Now? Really?
Yeah. I'm surprised that you're surprised. We've been saying this for a long time. I have not been on any of those shows for 2 years, with the exception of when I got beat up in the Senate. Amy let me back on her show just to show how I got beat up. That's it. So that's how bad it is, all right? So that's why, you know, when we have forensic evidence, we should be able to have an audience, and we get no audience unless you read raymcgovern.com. And I tell you, a lot of people are now.
Or unless you go onto the whistleblower newsroom. Yeah. What did you want to say, Celia?
Well, it's a phenomenon of, so Julian Assange is also, I will say, hated and shunned and maligned. Not that anybody, how could anybody hate Ray McGovern and Bill Binney? But I will say, regarding what you just said, you're marginalized as for what you just said. Julian Assange also very well documented. Why is that? Because the left, if I can use a big brush to just say, or most of the left is overcome with one big idea, namely Trump has got to go. Trump has got to go. And anybody who's forensic evidence, whatever, they up at their, whatever, forget it. Trump has got to go. And that eclipses all else. That's my interpretation. Do either of you agree with that?
You know, Ray.
I think you're right, Celia. I think you're right.
Ray, what do you think Assange sort of, not that he was looking to do this, but he sort of helped Trump by releasing the DNC stuff. So you don't think he's going to get any quarter at all in this with this administration or any of the anybody in justice or anything at all? I mean, is this mm-hmm. beyond? Is the deep state going to get him? Is the deep state going to eat Julian?
Well, they're going to do their best to do that. And you know, I have to say that if we pretend to be still in a democracy, this is a core moment here. Do we have to talk about the Department of, as Bill Binney says, the Department of Just Us?
Yeah.
He says that for the justice.
Yeah, exactly.
Or do we start acting like adults? And if this is not enough to get us out in the streets, to get us to protest the gross violation of this man's rights, and in London for the nonce, then, you know, I don't know what is. And, you know, I know quite well what happened in Germany in the 30s. I wasn't there, but I was in Germany for 5 years later, and I know a lot about that. Now, I see the parallels here with fascism sort of encroaching on what we do, the laws becoming able to disguise what's really going on. And worst of all, you know, you talked about Seth Rich before. Now, that has been verboten in the mainstream media. Why? Because it's a conspiracy theory. Now, who invented that way to denigrate people? It was a fellow named Alan Dulles. And when did he do that? He did that
when people said, hey, wait a second, you're going on the Warren Commission to investigate who killed John Kennedy? And we think that CIA had a role in that? Come on, what's going on? And what Alan Dulles said, conspiracy theorist.
No, they wrote. They actually wrote a memo explaining how you should use it, and you know, and giving examples of, you know, over curious journalists should be, you know, I mean, I actually have a copy of the memo. It's on the internet somewhere.
Yeah,
you know, we only have about a minute left, and I really want to hear your deepest thought on this situation, Ray. Your deepest thought, because this is really, it's really a bad day today. It's a bad day.
Well, it is maybe particularly for me because Julian's a good friend of mine. I visited him in the embassy there 3 times, if memory serves. Most recently, 3 days before the election here in the November election 2016. He's got guts that won't quit. He's not self-centered like everybody else says. He is, and most people don't realize this, responsible for Ed Snowden being free today. Certainly, you know, in Russia, but he's free. And Julian did that. That's one reason they hate him so much. But the real reason they hate him so much is for what he did in revealing the cyber tools of the CIA. And it was just 8 days later that then head of the CIA, Pompeo, said that he's running
a non-state intelligence gathering operation.
Non-state hostile intelligence outfit. Now, I don't know how that's a new brand of things, but that's where they have to get him. And they hate him from the war logs earlier on, but right now they want to prevent him from doing more with these Vault 7. He's got more stuff in Vault 7, so you know, I don't know what's going to happen. Presumably, he's got people.
I wonder if he has a dead man switch too. Anyway, well, I think, we got to go.
All right. Good talking to you.
But I want to thank you so much, Ray, for coming on and talking to us. And Celia, thanks. I know it's late over there in Spain, but it was great to have you back. No.
Yeah, great to be back. And thank you, Ray. And we'll keep praying for Julian.
I might mention that I have a couple of things up on my website today, raymcgovern.com. They have to do with Julian and how he was awarded the Sam Adams Award for Integrity. And we did a nice little citation for that. It's supremely relevant today.
Yes, it is.